We live in a world full of voices, full of those who profess wisdom, who are striving to have your ear, striving to get you to listen. You can get on Facebook or Twitter and you'll see all kinds of people who are trying to get your attention, people who are trying to get your ear, trying to teach you something. You can watch television and you don't have to watch for that long before someone is trying to get you to listen, trying to get your ear. You can get on the news, you can look at the newspaper, and you'll see that people have published articles trying to have a say in what you think and how you believe, and they're trying to get your attention, and they're trying to get your ear. You can meet with people at the office, and they'll talk, and before too long, people are trying to get your attention. In almost every area of your life, you will have people who are trying to convince you of something, trying to get you to believe something, trying to get you to listen to something. And some of those things are excellent. Some of those things that you can learn from and listen to are truly, wise, and there's brilliance, and there's people who are correct in what they believe, and there's a lot that you can learn. But what I hope at the end of this lesson we will come away thinking and doing is, over and above anything and everything else, more important than any other source of information that there is out there in the whole entire world, we will give our attention and give our ears to Jesus. Jesus is unparalleled in his wisdom. Jesus is unparalleled in his authority. There is nobody who competes, and there is nobody who comes close to the Son of God. So if you have your Bibles, turn to Mark chapter 9, and that's where our lesson is going to come from. Mark chapter 9, we live in a world of constant input. There are so many sources that are putting thoughts and ideas and words into you, and what those do over a period of time is they shape you. They shape the way that you think. They shape what you believe. They shape your worldview. If you had never sat in a classroom, whether it be in school, whether it be in college, whether it be in elementary school, whether it be in Bible class, if you had never sat in a classroom, you would probably think differently now than you otherwise do. If you had never watched TV before, if you had never watched the news, right, you would probably think differently right now than what you do. Why? Because input changes us. When there are things and messages that go into us, we think about them. And even if we don't like the message, that can change us. We then become against something, or we can become for something, or we can become aware of something that previously we were ignorant of. And all of a sudden, now that thing that we're aware of stays on our hearts and minds more often. Like, things that we hear, things that we see, they change us. And that's the way we were created, and that's perfectly fine. But what it does is it makes us have to ask ourselves several questions. What am I putting in, and what is changing me? Those are really important for every person. Those are important questions to ask. How much influence am I giving this source over my life and over my world and over the way that I think about everything? Now, if you spend hours a day watching maybe news or watching a certain political program, that's going to change you. It might make you more bitter. It might make you more angry. It might make you more hateful. There are things that if you dedicate too much time to them, they can change you, and not always for the better. In the passage that we're going to be reading, there's going to be a voice from God that tells us what we ought to be listening to. It's going to tell us what we ought to be filling our lives with and filling our world with. Because if you're going to be changed by something, this is what you want to be changed by. You want to be changed by the message of Jesus himself. And so one thing I would encourage every one of us to do is to think about how much time we spend filling ourselves with messages from other places and compare that to how much time we fill ourselves with the message of Jesus. We're going to be looking at a passage that's often called the Transfiguration. It is a really unique and beautiful passage. It is unlike really any other scene in the Bible, I think. And it's one that makes a profound impact on those who see it and witness it. In fact, in 2 Peter chapter 1, Peter, who's one of those people who witnessed it, he's going to make reference to it again. He's going to talk about seeing the glory of the Lord and how that made a profound change in him and in his view of the world. This is a message that, if taken seriously, it can change you. And so in Mark chapter 1, I think it's important to kind of set the scene a little bit. If you've been reading through Mark up to this point, you've read the first 8 chapters. And in the first 8 chapters, we see Jesus introduced. We see Jesus begin his ministry. Jesus calls the 12 disciples. Jesus does incredible things for the 12 disciples. He teaches them the meaning of his parables in private so that they could really get a good grasp of them. And you know what happens? They don't get a good grasp of them. He does miracles for his disciples that they can see and that no one else is around to see. When he calms the storm out on the boat, they're all able to see that. And you know what happens? They actually don't learn all that much from it. When they see him calm the storm, instead of responding with worship and praise in Mark's gospel, it says they were afraid and they questioned, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? It's like they ask the question, but no answer is given. It's really an important question to think about, by the way. But then Jesus, he casts out demons in profound ways. And the disciples still don't always seem to learn all that much from it. He feeds the 4,000. He feeds the 5,000. And the disciples, it says, they hadn't gained any insight from the incident with the loaves because their heart was hardened. We find out that even the disciples sitting there watching these things, they're not learning from them. He walks on the water and they respond with fear, thinking that he's a ghost. Like all the way through, the disciples have seen amazing things. And yet they have not been impacted as they should. They've seen incredible things. They've heard amazing teachings. And yet they still, apparently, are deaf, blind, and hard-hearted. At least that's what Jesus says in chapter 8. In chapter 8, they get on a boat with Jesus. After having seen all of this, right? They get on a boat with Jesus, and they forgot to bring bread. They only have one loaf of bread. Now think about where, this is Mark chapter 8. They've already seen Jesus multiply bread 2 times for 5,000 people and for 4,000 people. They've already seen him calm a storm on the Sea of Galilee. They've already seen him walk on the Sea of Galilee. And here they are with the Son of God on the Sea of Galilee with a loaf of bread. And you know what happens? They start getting worried and concerned and arguing because someone forgot the rest of the bread. That's what happens. It's like, look, if you've been paying attention, you know this isn't a big problem, right? Jesus can do some incredible things. Remember this sea that we're on right now? You've already seen him command the wind and the waves, and they obeyed him. You've already seen him walk on it. That bread that you're holding, you've already seen him feed 5,000 people and 4,000 people with it. And so that's when Jesus asks them, having eyes, do you not see? That means you're blind. He says, having ears, do you not hear? So that means you're deaf to my teachings. He says, do you have a hardened heart? And we were already told that they did. The disciples are very, very slow to understand what Jesus is doing. But something amazing happens at the end of Mark chapter 8. After all of these things, Jesus ends up healing a blind man. And then they go off to Caesarea Philippi, to this place of paganism and this place of emperor worship. And Jesus asks them there, who is it that people say that I am? He's about to get them to start thinking really hard for once about his identity, because they seem to be missing it over and over again. And they tell him what the word on the street is, what the hubbub is all about Jesus. So some say you're one of the prophets of old. Some say you're Jeremiah. Some say you're John the Baptist. You know, there's all these ideas floating around. And Jesus says, but who do you say that I am? And Peter says, you are the Christ. That's monumental in Mark's gospel because no one has said that yet. None of the disciples have realized that yet. Now, all of a sudden, they have this word to describe who Jesus is. He is the Christ. And he's completely right on that. Peter got it right. Jesus is the Christ. But then Jesus tells him, he actually rebukes him and tells him, don't tell anybody. And that's a strange turn at this point. You would expect Jesus to give him a hug, pat him on the back, and say, you're right. You finally got one right. You're not so hard-hearted and deaf and blind to my teachings anymore. But that's not what happens. Jesus says, don't tell anybody. Why would he do that? There's a lot of explanations that are given, but I'm going to tell you my thought. Because even though they now recognize that Jesus is the Christ, they don't know what Christ means yet. They don't believe or understand what the Christ is the way Jesus wants them to. So now, stage 2 is getting them to understand what happens to the Christ. And that's where Jesus finally reveals to them that he, as the Christ, is going to be brought to Jerusalem, is going to be rejected, is going to be denied, is going to be beaten, is going to be killed. And then 3 days later, he will rise again. And so he tells them that very clearly, what's going to happen. And you know how Peter responds? Peter rebukes Jesus. If you're gonna rebuke somebody, make sure it's not Jesus. That's never gonna work out well for you. Peter rebukes Jesus and says something along the lines of, no, that's not what happens to the Christ. This will never happen to you. You know, you can imagine Peter's well familiar with the story. He's listened to Moses. He's listened to the prophets. He knows the Christ is a glorious king that everyone worships and falls before. He's not someone who goes to Jerusalem and is beaten and killed. He's someone who conquers in Jerusalem. And who are we going to conquer? Well, if you look around right now, it looks like the Roman Empire is a pretty good choice. Conquer them. Let's get this kingdom going, right? Peter's probably excited. And Jesus says, no, I'm going to be killed. I'm going to suffer. And then Jesus rebukes Peter right back and says, get behind me, Satan, for you're setting your mind on man's interests and not God's. How is Peter doing that? How is he setting his mind on man's interests? Well, he's thinking about a kingdom, right? He's thinking about wealth and power and prosperity. He's thinking about some glory for himself. Things are going to go well. We just found the Christ. We've been looking for him for a long, long time. This is exciting news. And then as soon as he hears that, he finds out, but it actually is going to lead to pain, suffering, and death. Peter doesn't want that. So that's when Jesus starts asking those questions that you've heard before. Peter, what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? That's what Peter's thinking, by the way. We gained the whole world. We just found the Christ. Like, no one can stand in our way now. Like, Peter is going to have to do some serious soul searching. The rest of the disciples are too. In fact, everyone who comes to Jesus is going to have to give up their natural understanding of power and glory and prominence. And we're going to have to come face to face with what the cross actually means. Jesus says in this passage, if you want to follow me, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow after me. That's not a message I don't think Peter wanted to hear at all. That's not what he expected to hear. That's not what he was, you know, was on his agenda for the day, carrying a cross and becoming a martyr, becoming someone who lives every day as a martyr, someone who gives up what your hopes and dreams were for the sake of the gospel. That I don't think that's what Peter, I thought Peter probably thought the gospel would fulfill his hopes and dreams, not change them to mean a cross. Like, that's not what he had in mind. And so I have no doubt that at the very end of Mark chapter 8, the disciples are quite discouraged. They have been hard-hearted and blind and deaf this whole time. Then they find the Christ and they realize, even finding the Christ, we have no idea what he has in store for us. And so it sounds like a lot of pain and heartache is headed our way. And so now they're going to start questioning everything. Now they're going to start doubting everything. And it's at that time that Mark chapter 9 and verse 1 begins. Jesus was saying to them, truly I say to you, there are some of you standing here who will not taste death until they see the kingdom of God after it has come with power. That is a very important message for people who are starting to doubt everything they thought they knew about the Christ and the Messiah. People who have met Jesus and are now questioning and thinking, this is going to lead to my death, and this is going to lead to pain and hardship, and this is going to lead to a cross. They now have to come to grips with the fact that all of their hopes and expectations have been wrong. They're no doubt downtrodden, and yet Jesus says to them, some of you standing here will not taste death until you can actually see what I'm talking about. When you see the kingdom with its power coming, that will be the source that you need to build you right back up. So he gives them a word of encouragement that they needed to hear. And then he takes a couple of his disciples 6 days later in verse 2, and he does something else that I think is going to encourage them. This is our introduction to the Transfiguration. He takes Peter, James, and John. This is verse 2. And he brings them up on a high mountain by themselves. By the way, remember that right there. They go up on a high mountain. That's an important detail. And he was transfigured before them, and his garments became radiant and exceedingly white, as no launderer on earth can whiten them. And Elijah appeared to them, along with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. So keep in mind, high mountain, keep in mind Moses and Elijah are there. Then verse 5, Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three tabernacles, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah." And then verse 6 is funny. "For he did not know what to answer, and they became terrified." Here's what Peter thinks. "I don't know what to say. Better say something." And so he comes up with this idea to build three tabernacles for them, maybe as a way of honoring them. Maybe as a way of, "Hey, you gotta stay a little bit longer. I got a nice little tent for you." But Peter has this idea, and he says it just out of ignorance. He doesn't know what else to say, and he's afraid. And so Peter, that's a good time to stop and to listen instead of speaking. By the way, we started off this lesson talking about how much input we get from the world around us. One of the lessons that I think we should probably take from this passage, sometimes we don't know what to say, so it's a good time to not say anything. Sometimes we don't know what to say, and so listening is a much, much better option. I think that's actually what God wants Peter to do. Maybe stop talking and maybe start listening a little bit more. Because as Peter says this, verse 7 says, "Then a cloud formed, overshadowing them." Okay, I've told you a couple things to remember. Remember they're up on a high mountain. Remember Moses is there with Elijah. And now a cloud appears up on the mountain with them. And then a voice comes out of this cloud. "This is my beloved son. Listen to him." And all at once, they looked around and they saw no one with them anymore except Jesus alone. That's how it ends. A voice comes from a cloud. "This is my beloved son. Listen to him." Elijah's gone. Moses is gone. The cloud is gone. They're just standing there with Jesus. That's the message he wanted them to hear. What is so significant about that message? Well, I think a couple of things. One, seeing Jesus transfigured before them with Moses and Elijah is an earth-shattering moment. When you have heard of Moses and Elijah your whole life, and then you actually get to see them, and they're there with Jesus, that's something you will never, ever, ever forget. Number two, they're up on a mountain. They're with Moses. There's a cloud. God speaks from the cloud. Doesn't that remind you of something? Doesn't that remind you of all of those stories back in Exodus and back in Numbers and earlier in our Bible in Leviticus where God is speaking to Moses from the cloud? And what is God's main message to the people? Listen to Moses. He is giving Moses the law. Listen to Moses. Moses is the person who's leading you. Moses is chosen by God. How is Moses nowhere to go? He follows that cloud. Where does the cloud go? It goes up on Sinai. What does Moses do? He goes up to the cloud. He gets the Ten Commandments. He comes down. He brings them to the people. Like, this cloud is God's presence all throughout Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy. And you see this cloud representing the very glory of God himself. And he goes up on the mountain like Moses does. Like, this is all Exodus language. Only now, when Moses is up on the mountain, and he's there with Elijah also, the greatest prophet in Israel's history, they are standing there together in the cloud forms, and Peter and James and John are able to see this, and Jesus is there. And you would expect the cloud to say, "Remember the words of Moses and be faithful to his teaching." Like, that might be what they're expecting to hear, but that's not what they hear. You might expect something like, "Remember the great prophet Elijah and his reformations in Israel and his messages to the kings. Listen to the prophet Elijah." But again, that's not what they hear. Like, the greatest prophets in the history of Israel are there. Some see them as representing the law and the prophets. You know, Moses represents the law of Moses and Elijah represents the prophets. And I'm going to tell you something. If you're looking for input from somewhere, the law and the prophets are a good place to go, especially if you're an Israelite. You know, there's tremendous wisdom there. It comes from God even. And so they're there and they are told not to listen to Moses, not to listen to Elijah, but to listen to my beloved son. Jesus is given the title and the honor that far exceeds Moses and far exceeds Elijah. And he is the one that they are told to listen to. You know, I tend to think if you're looking for things to listen to, Moses is probably a pretty good option. Better than most things you'll read on Facebook. Better than most things you'll read in the news. Better than most articles you'll find. Moses is a pretty good source of wisdom. And even in comparison to Moses and Elijah, there's no comparison to Jesus. Jesus is far and away number one above and over all. Listen to him. So my admonition is listen to Jesus. I think one of the reasons that message becomes so powerful in this scene is because during the transfiguration, remember, it's not just that they go up on the mountain and not just that they appear, but there is actually that word transfiguration. There's a change that takes place in them. When you see Moses and Elijah, you're reminded of the greatest things in the past, the greatest prophets in the history of Israel, the greatest men of God who have ever lived. Moses and Elijah right there. It reminds you of the past. Then when you see Jesus standing before you, the one who you've been walking with, the one who you've seen on the boat, the one who you've seen feed the thousand, you're reminded of the crucial present in which you are now living. But then as you see the glory of the transfiguration and them changed and the glory that overwhelms them, you're reminded of the future that God has in store for you. The future of life, even after death. I mean, Moses and Elijah are there, right? That is a sign of something. That death isn't the end of the story, right? And so you're reminded of the past, and you're reminded of the present, and you're reminded of the future, and they all meet together in this one moment. The greatest things of the past and the greatest things of the future and everything around you in the present is pointing you to listen to Jesus. Above and over anything and everything else, He's the beloved Son of God. He's the one that you listen to. You won't find a better message than that anywhere in the future. You won't find a better message than that anywhere around you right now. And even looking to the past, you won't find a better message to that. Listen to Jesus. And as they disappear, and as all things return back to normal, they begin that trek down the mountain. And I just can't imagine what's going through the minds of Peter, James, and John as they make their way down. But as they're coming down, verse 9 says, "And as they were coming down from the mountain, Jesus gave them orders not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man rose from the dead. And they seized upon that statement, discussing with one another what rising from the dead means." You remember how they don't get things too well? All the way through the story, they've been seeing incredible things and kind of slowly not getting it. And then finally, they realize that Jesus is the Christ and they rebuke him when he tells them what's going to happen to him. And it's like they're still not getting it. Well, here they're coming down from the mountain and Jesus tells them, "You've seen something incredible. Keep it to yourselves until the Son of Man is raised from the dead." And we could ask, why wait? Like, what's the purpose of that? And I think it's going to be the same purpose as the other times Jesus tells them not to say anything. I think he's wanting them to see the gospel play out before they go tell everyone about it, because they don't seem to be getting the message right. But notice when it says they didn't understand what raising from the dead meant. We look at that and we think, well, how foolish. How could you not know what those words mean? They're very clear words, you know? They're raising from the dead. Like, you die and then you come back. I could see other things they might be thinking about. Jesus, doesn't he have a tendency to sometimes speak in riddles or sometimes speak in metaphorical or spiritual language? Maybe they're thinking some sort of a spiritual new life is going to take place, maybe? I don't know. Maybe they're thinking the end of time, because that's when the Jews expected the resurrection. Like, Pharisees, they believed in the resurrection, but they believed that it was a general event that happened for all people at the end of time. They didn't believe that someone was going to be raised in, like, right in the middle of time, you know, like Jesus. They certainly didn't think the Christ was going to be raised from the dead. The disciples didn't think the Christ was going to be raised from the dead. Do you know why? They didn't think anyone was going to kill him. So they weren't expecting resurrection. They were expecting glory in a kingdom. And so there's a lot of confusion about what does he mean when he says, "Don't tell anyone until the Son of Man raises from the dead." But you notice Mark is writing, and so Mark is perfectly clear, fine with everybody knowing and telling everyone about it. Why? Because he's already raised from the dead. And again, that is another reminder of what the transfiguration is all about. It's about the hope of future glory and the resurrection of Jesus. If you want to live with Jesus forever, if you want to live with Jesus in glory, if you want to be raised up to new life with the Son of God, listen to him now. Live your life as though Jesus is the Lord of your life, your ultimate source of authority, the ultimate definition of your worldview is found in Jesus himself. So the challenge to you as we draw our lesson to a close is make sure you're finding time every day to listen to Jesus. Read through the Gospels and listen to Jesus. Spend time in prayer contemplating the life of Jesus. Read through the Bible as an interpretation of the life and the meaning and the message of Jesus himself. Spend time getting more input from Jesus this week. If you're going to be changed by something, if you're going to allow something to alter the way that you view the world, let it be Jesus. Make sure that it's Jesus over and above anything and everything else. Listen to Jesus. And if there's anyone here who would like to become part of the kingdom of God established by Jesus, where the God reigns on earth as he does in heaven, we are every day living for that kingdom. If you want to become a part of this church, if you want to give your life over to Christ, if you want to have your sins washed away and to have hope of that new life and hope of resurrection, please let that be known. Please come sit on the front row while we stand and as we sing.